jobs, unemployment, and more. Are you working right now? Let us know. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a look at how the coronavirus pandemic is impacting our Northeast Florida jobs picture. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, the state's gyms are still closed, but they're making plans to reopen soon. We'll speak with the president of the First Coast YMCA. But first this morning, the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health reports 41,923 COVID cases in the state and 1,779 deaths. In our area, we have 1,925 reported cases of the virus and 61 deaths. Clay County recorded its 22nd death of a 50-year-old woman. That's the second youngest person in our area to die from the disease. Meanwhile, Mayor Lenny Curry said Tuesday his work-from-home executive order is going to expire next week. But he hopes businesses will continue to allow employees with kids and those who are vulnerable to work remotely. So right now we want to check in on the jobs and employment situation in our area. For example, this week we learned that TIAA Bank has about 1,000 employees in Jacksonville, but they are offering buyouts to 75% of their workforce in our region. Tim Gibbons is covering that. He's editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, and he's on the line. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Also joining us, Ron Whittington of Career Source Northeast Florida. Hey, Ron.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you both on the show. And as we talk jobs and unemployment, we want your calls. Are you working? Are you unemployed? Have you been able to get unemployment from the state of Florida? Or are you having trouble still? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. In a minute, Ron, we'll get the big picture from you. But first, Tim Gibbons, let's talk about this new headline. TIAA is offering buyouts to 3/4 of its workforce, and that includes Jacksonville-based TIAA Bank. That is hundreds of people in this area now being told they're out of a job, adding to the unemployment numbers. Can you tell us what we know?
Sure. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. So TIAA, as an organization, you might know it as TIAA Craft. They, I was already first familiar with them, hearing them sponsor things on NPR. So they're a huge financial services company. They bought what was then EverBank a couple years ago and kept the bank part headquartered here in Jacksonville. So across the entire organization, they're offering these buyouts to 3/4 of their employees. It's unclear how many of those buyouts will come from TIAA Bank, which is the Jacksonville operation. But as you said, there's over 1,000 employees here in Jacksonville. So even if it's just a fraction of those, we're talking about hundreds of people, which obviously has ramifications for those people, has ramifications for the unemployment figure here locally, and impacts things like downtown development and just the general workforce in the area.
Sure. And Ron Whittington, you're new in the position, Career Source Northeast Florida, succeeding Candace Moody, who also was just a veteran spokesperson and always joined this show to provide these updates. Can you bring us up to date on the regional job numbers and what's going on at the Career Center, what you're doing, too, to plan to reopen back up so people can get help with job assistance?
Well, we've been closed. Our center's closed in the middle of March, but since that time, we've been doing virtual counseling over the phone. Basically, right now, our numbers today through Employee Florida show that in this region, which is our 7 counties here, we have about 2,000 jobs that are showing through our partners, but also we're seeing on some other job search software that we're using that there are over 10,000 jobs. So job-wise, compared to, say, 08, when we had the economic collapse, there were hardly any jobs out there available. So there are positions out there that are in need of people. The majority look like they're going to be in the healthcare industry and also in retail, because we have seen a big influx of people that are working at Winn-Dixie and Publix and places like that, places that have remained open throughout the pandemic.
Well, that provides some hope to people out of work. Tim Gibbons, We are continuing to hear about the colossal failure of Florida's unemployment claims system. Hundreds of thousands of Floridians are in limbo, can't get answers, and they need money now, whether it's an unemployment check or a new job.
That is the huge problem. I mean, the unemployment fiasco is something that's going to reverberate for months, years, where you have people who, as you said, need the money now, and that's the entire point of unemployment. I mean, the idea that people pay into this system when they're working, and the idea is that when something like this happens, they get that money back, basically. And the economy is a system. So if people don't have money, they can't spend money, which means other people aren't making money. And that's the idea of having people get this type of assistance. Mm-hmm. As Ron just mentioned, the one kind of bright spot is in that supermarket, not retail overall, but supermarket industry has seen a definite surge. Here locally, there's been several. I know Southeastern Grocers has been hiring. Publix across the state has been hiring. There is this basic influx of people who are shopping more at supermarkets. They're not going to restaurants necessarily as much. So they're cooking at home, they're going to supermarkets, and they are seeing a surge in people.
Ron, you know, those jobs are available if you want to go work in grocery stores or delivering food. That said, when you take those kinds of jobs, those gigs right now, you are putting yourself a little bit more at risk of getting the virus.
Well, you know, with the phase two's coming up, but basically if you've seen some of the stats we've seen, is the grocery stores have not seen a real big influx of COVID cases. So a lot of them have put in, as you saw, all of us saw when we went to the grocery stores, a lot of them put in the plexiglass, the safety protocol early. So yes, you're right. There is some risk, and it's a level of risk people are willing to encounter out there, whether they're going to work or going out to shop. So we're seeing that, and I think that's one of the big unknowns moving forward. Is, you know, how is this thing going to open up? Are when they go to a 50% at the restaurants, are most of those people going to go back? Are they going to stay home? Or are they going to try to go into another field of work? So it's there's a lot of unknowns as we open up the career centers to what we're going to see in the next couple of weeks when we do open up to the public.
And I'm sure people will deluge your centers when you're open. What advice do you have for people planning to connect with Career Source?
Well, we're in the process now. One of the issues, one of the challenges we're dealing with is that at a time where we've got to put in social distancing, that's going to reduce our capacity to see people. And also, what we don't want are crowds at the career centers when we reopen. So right now, we're doing spacing at the career centers, putting in the plexiglass, putting in the safety procedures. We're also expanding and finding new spots. Say, for example, we have a partnership with Clay County that started earlier this week where we're using a resource center at the fairgrounds with 15 workstations to assist, and that will remain open when we open our regular or career center in the next couple of weeks. So what we're doing is trying to find additional space at Gateway. We're leasing some space there at our career center there. So when we open up, it's going to be different procedures. Probably the biggest one will be by appointment only. We won't be seeing people walk up, at least initially, when we open. So people will have to make an appointment through the website or through our jobs phone number, and then we take them on an appointment basis, one each hour.
All right.
Workstations we have available.
And we're talking now with Ron Whittington of Career Source and Tim Gibbons of the Jacksonville Business Journal about jobs. Are you working? Are you unemployed? Did you get your unemployment check from the state, or are you having trouble? Let us know how you're doing out there as the next phase of reopening Florida prepares to get underway. It's 549-2937. Justin is in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Justin. Good morning.
Melissa, good morning. I got a slight speech impediment, but
that's okay.
I'm not working.
Uh-huh.
I'm not working. Melissa, I've been making donuts all my life. I started off at $1.50 an hour. I got up to $8.74 an hour. I'm out of work. I've never had so much money in my life. I want to thank the federal government. I want to thank Congress. Keep it coming.
So wait a minute. So you're getting your unemployment, your federal unemployment, and your state unemployment?
I'm getting nearly $900 every time. I've got more money than I ever have in my life. The man said I ain't got to pay my rent. The JA ain't going to cut my lights off. I got an EBT card. I'm telling you, I'm rolling.
Huh. Okay, so Justin, so tell me about your experience with the state unemployment website.
It came. I got right on it. When they said go home, I got right on it, and I filed. I got it. It took me about 3 or 4 weeks, but I got it. I got the $1,200. I got the $600 every pay time, and I am rolling.
So are you going to go back to work? Are you going
to
go back?
He doesn't ask me to come back to work. No, ma'am. He doesn't ask me to come back to work. He's begging me to come back to work. For $8.74, I'm getting almost a grand a week. I'm paying $50,000 this year. I hope they cut the thing off until 2021. I hope somebody.
All right. I hear you, Justin. Thank you. Thanks for that. All right. Tim, thanks. Thanks for that. Tim Gibbons. Now, this brings up an important point, and I'm not sure that was a real call, but if it
was,
let's just
say that sounded a little bit trolly to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was a real call, but that said, there are folks out there who were low-wage workers, and they are taking in a little more money now if they're able to get both state and federal unemployment and a stimulus check than they were before. So what about that?
Sure. And that is a concern. If you are a employer and you are paying people below what they're making on unemployment, there is an issue of are you able to afford those people? And this is when we talk about getting back to normal. Whatever the new normal is going to be different. Are there going to be jobs that have to pay more? You know, very possibly. In much the same way that, you know, after 9/11, the new normal involved a totally different airport experience. Once we get through this and we get back to something different, restaurants are going to be different, bars are going to be different, and the employment situation very possibly is different. It is important to keep in mind, of course, that those payments that the caller was talking about are not a, you know, don't go on forever. So the idea is that that money is for a finite time. And frankly, the studies show that lower income people who get money like that have to spend it. So it's not like it's going into a bank account sitting somewhere. Hopefully, you know, Justin is going out buying donuts from somebody else with that money and, you know, pumping it back into the economy.
Right. Lots of other folks on hold who are not in that situation. They're having trouble getting unemployment. Let's go to Cheryl on the South Side. Hi, Cheryl. Good morning.
Oh, hold on. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
I'm good, except if that was a real call before me, he's had quite a different experience than I've had. So I have, I applied for unemployment, although I should say I'm a 1099 worker. I have an Etsy shop. It used to be successful and busy and not so now. So right after the CARES Act was passed, I applied the next morning, and 8 weeks later, I'm still sitting there. They keep changing my statuses. Mm. And now I'm not. I know I don't qualify for state unemployment, but I most certainly do qualify for the PUA under the CARES Act.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done everything I can from writing them to calling them to try and get the link to sign up for PUA, and nothing yet.
So tell me what your job was, what you did before this hit.
Well, I'm 63, and I was married a very long time, so I was awarded some alimony, but my ex-husband has stopped paying that. So that was half my income. The other half of my income was, if you've heard about Etsy.
Yeah,
I
sure.
I am a shop. Sure, I own a shop there. So I do personalized gifts. This time of the year, I would be doing wedding gifts, graduation gifts, Mother's Day gifts. So my sales are down by 90%.
Right.
So I really do, and I'm living on my savings, what I have.
Okay.
And I really could use the federal aid, but I cannot get the state to even link me up.
And that's what we hear overwhelmingly, Cheryl. And I'm so sorry that you're going through that. And I appreciate you calling and letting us know. And, you know, we continue to focus on this issue as Florida says it's doing what it can to fix the unemployment glitches. All I can say is you got to keep trying. I wish I had more information to give you.
Oh, I don't expect you for information. Thank you. I just wanted to get my little story out.
Yeah, of course. And thank you, Cheryl. Ron Whittington, that is such a common situation for people. They cannot access the benefits in the state of Florida. And what are you hearing about that from people contacting you at CareerSource?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I wish every caller, I wish every person was like the previous caller who had gotten through, and if that was real. But we've gotten a lot of calls. At one point, right after the closure in March, our call center has been operational, like I said, since we closed the centers. We had 3,000, up to above 2,000 calls one day just on unemployment or reemployment benefits. So, you know, we're the workforce development organization in the region, so we can really put our job is put people into jobs. So we can't access that system now. We try to help them navigate over the phone, but that system's closed to us as well. So it's been really tough to hear some of the stories from folks, and we just want to give them hope that if they don't get their unemployment, there are jobs out there that we can hopefully put them into to get them some relief.
And we'll give this number again, but how can people reach CareerSource right now?
You can contact us at 904-356-JOBS. That's 356-5627.
Okay.
And go to our website, which is CareerSourceNortheastFlorida.com.
Got that. Natasha in Jacksonville. What's your story, Natasha?
Hi. I am a transport to Jacksonville. I moved here from Dallas, Texas to actually start a business, and I became a gig worker in lieu of me starting my business, and then I lost my gig work back in March. I applied for unemployment and was in purgatory for about a month. Received an ineligibility, not even a notification. I had to go onto the website and find out. Really, I just want to know, what kind of call center have they created? What kind of jobs have they created where people can't even answer questions whenever you call? Why did they hire all these people when they can't even help anyone? Why not just give us the money? I don't really understand what's happening at this
I know,
point.
Natasha, and I'm so sorry. You know, and thank you, Natasha, for your call. You know, Tim Gibbons, this week, First Coast News is reporting that the call center that the state is staffing to take all these unemployment claims is mostly temporary employees. They're spread all over the country, and they often don't have information to even answer basic questions to people like Natasha calling in.
The unemployment fiasco, unemployment system fiasco is as I said, is going to have long and lingering impacts. And I in some ways, I think a lot of the focus has been on, you know, in coverage in general of how do we reopen the economy and what do we do to get moving. But there has been a lot of great reporting done on how bad this system is. Frankly, the system's been bad for years. This is just, you know, the stress test is obviously making it even worse. But Florida basically took a position that it did not want to make getting unemployment payments easy for, you know, reasons that people can agree or disagree with, but they made that choice that getting unemployment was supposed to be hard, and now it's hard for a lot of people. And as you know, if you go back through both of your last two callers, your 1099 employees particularly have it so, so hard right now. And that is a direction the economy was moving in before all of this hit, was more gig work, more of those, you know, make your own job sort of things. And those people are truly hurting.
Yeah, Ron Whittington, if people get in touch with you at CareerSource, those are going to be the kinds of opportunities they are looking at for the most part, right?
I'm sorry, I missed the
no problem. When people are trying to get in touch with you to get new work, it will be 1099 type work for the most part that's available, correct?
There is some gig work involved, but there are some full-time positions too. I mean, what we're going to see is what you see after, I think what we're going to see is what you see after any kind of economic disruption like this, is where you're going to see some people that are going to pivot and have to go into another career. What we don't know is, like, for example, at the restaurants, you know, how many of those people are going to go back into that system, but But what you're saying is, yes, that's true. There will be some gig positions. There are now. I mean, there's Uber Eats and some of these other delivery systems, Pizza Hut, those places, that's what you're seeing. A lot of people doing delivery service and things like that. The woman who called in that she was doing the gift baskets and things like that, you know, some of those people are shifting over and creating masks and things like that. So there's mm-hmm. there's other gig opportunities people can pivot on. Just, for example, like the distillery down in St. Augustine that was doing alcohol, and then they suddenly shifted and started doing hand sanitizer. So some businesses are actually shifting to deal with what the market needs right now.
Right.
And job seekers are going to have to do the same type of thing moving through this.
Andrea tweets the show, lots of glitches and issues kept me from logging in to access unemployment. Tried to get in touch with someone for help, but I can never get through. She says, one more tweet, I'm not working. I've received checks and haven't gotten another in 3 weeks. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about jobs and unemployment in Florida with Ron Whittington of Career Source and Tim Gibbons of the Jax Business Journal. 549-2937. Let us know your situation. Dennis is in Jax. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead. Hey, Dennis, you're on the air. Okay, give us a call back, Dennis. Let's go to Brandy. Brandy in Jacksonville. Hello, Brandy. Good morning to you.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
Great. My name is Brandy Hill. I'm actually a business owner.
Okay.
I'm a photographer, and I kind of specialize in events around town. So, of course, my work is canceled. However, I'm actually calling in kind of on behalf of the largest group of business owners in Jacksonville and in the country, who are the 1099s, the self-employed. We make up 75%. Well, according to the 2016 census, we are now probably way over 75%. Back in 2016, we were at 75% of business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess where my concern was when the city got all the stimulus money, they got $27 million, they put it aside for small businesses. None of it is coming to us. They just now are getting a bill proposed. Like, first, they put $27 million in a loan program, which... theoretically, I've looked at the loan. It seems like a great idea. It's nice, but that money just sitting there like that, and it's not really, you know, they're paying the interest of a loan. That's a certain business demographic that can afford a loan right now. That's not really the majority of us. A lot mm-hmm. of us like the
What's your business, Brandy? Can you tell us?
I'm actually a photographer, so I would be considered. I get 1099. I'm actually a contractor, so for a lot of businesses hire me. But then I also work privately, so I also get paid. So I'm a 1099. I'm a contractor. I'm a self-employed business owner. I'm a sole proprietor. The girl who just called in with the gig worker. A lot of people don't know this, but like I know this because I just did a documentation on some gig workers for Amazon. Gig workers have been displaced, and I'll tell you how that happened. You would think that they're getting a lot of work right now. But so they've worked in this gig economy where they've been driving and delivering for places like Amazon. Well, when everyone lost their job, the first thing Bezos did was open up his market. Like he brought on board like all these drivers. He loves those drivers because they'll work for cheap. They're desperate. They just lost their job. They don't know the ins and outs of the Amazon kind of riding system. So they'll sign up for jobs that are like paying nothing. I mean, and they don't have the experience, they don't understand things. They're working for way, like very low wages, and they're grabbing up all the jobs, and they are essentially displacing all the regular drivers.
Mm.
And that's what's going on with all these gig companies, all these corporate-owned, huge gig companies. They are displacing those people, and all those people, they're out without work right now. Or they can jump on, and every now and then, they don't have any work available because when they get on those little apps, there's nothing there that's popping up. And I only know that because I've watched it firsthand. Like, I've seen, I've traveled with them. I know what they're experiencing. And for the city to have taken all that money and not have looked at census data and not have looked at the numbers and said, you know what, we have more sole proprietors, we have more self-employed, we have more gig workers. We are the ones who are propping up the major businesses. They hire us because we are cheap labor. We're 1099.
Sure.
We don't have to pay
profits.
We specialize in what we do. The city can't afford to hire a professional. You know, they have a few professional photographers, but they can't afford us
I hear you, Brandy. I mean, and there are and I want to put this to Tim Gibbons, and I want to thank you, Brandy, for sharing your story, your perspective, because you're absolutely right.
The 1099 is the economy. We are the base.
You are the backbone. It's true. Thank you, Brandy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tim Gibbons, she's absolutely right. Millions and millions of Americans are just like Brandy. They are working maybe two or three different jobs. They provide incredible essential support to large corporations, which could not exist without them. And these are often the most vulnerable people in the type of situation that we're in now. And so what are your thoughts about how this pandemic is going to change work for people?
I mean, obviously, it's a generational sort of change of what type of jobs and what people get paid and how that moves forward. I mean, a lot of the programs on both the local and federal level were designed literally to help companies keep employees. You know, their stated goal of like the Paycheck Protection Program was we're giving it to businesses so that they can have workers come back. There's a whole bunch of problems with PPP that I'm not going to try to get into here on the air, but at least that was its goal. You look at the city's loan program, which has helped a lot of small businesses, but they require that you have at least two employees. They were explicitly not designed for 1099 workers for sole proprietorships, and there are a lot of them. I mean, we talk about the American dream for many people is owning a business. Owning a business does not necessarily mean having employees. It means having this thing that you've created, and those people don't have the same access as a larger company does. Now, sole proprietors can get PPP loans that in the second tranche that they were included. But as Brandy just said, that's a loan payment now that you have to be concerned about depending on what's forgiven on that. So people are looking for grants. They're not looking for loans.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Cindy, getting back to your story in the Business Journal about TIAA Bank. She writes, this situation is going to tank much of what is related to commercial real estate. That's a lot of employees and their families. The backlash will be huge, including empty buildings. So if
knows exactly what happens with,
I mean, 75% of TIAA Bank employees are taking buyouts. Well, that means a lot of empty office space, and that's just one company.
Yes, we have a fairly in-depth story that actually will be on our website later today and in print on Friday that deals with all of the commercial real estate ramifications. But it is the big question going forward. What are offices going to look like? How much space do people need? With social distancing, do offices get bigger? With people working from home, do they get smaller? With people being laid off, do you just not need as much space? And it will have absolute ramifications throughout the entire commercial real estate industry.
Let's go to Felix in Jax. Hi, Felix. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Yeah, I'm 71. I've been retired for about 4 years now. And I've been doing part-time work, first with Uber and then with Lyft and now with another company doing deliveries. Well, I find that seniors tend to be more dependable workers. They go and show up every day. And they help their economy out. But now that seniors might get sick doing these delivery things, maybe the government should just give those stipends to seniors and more jobs will open up for the younger generation.
All right, Felix, thank you for that. Ron Whittington, let's close with you. I don't know if you could hear that call from Felix. But he said he had no trouble finding part-time work, but that he thinks those jobs should be reserved, if possible, for younger employees and direct more of the federal stimulus payments to seniors. That was just his take on it. But let's once again reiterate where people can contact CareerSource and how soon you'll be open for appointments.
Okay, so we right now people can contact us at 356-JOBS. And talk virtually with a career counseling to connect with Employee Florida, where we're getting the majority of the jobs we have listed here. We will be opening up in the next couple of weeks. We're in the process of adding more capacity so we can handle more people when we do open. We have if you're in Clay County, we're operating in support of the Clay County EOC at the fairgrounds there throughout the week. Just go to our website and make an appointment. And in fact, we have a workshop going on in Fernandina Beach, we're in attendance at an event today from 9 to noon at the Fernandina Beach High School. And we will be opening up toward the end of the month. All the career centers, but again, by appointment only. That's the big change, at least initially, while we ramp up and find out what type of response we're going to get when we do open the career centers.
We have an email here from Florida Blue just now. If you have an insurance license, Florida Blue is hiring 1,200 telesales agents. Go to careers.floridablue.com. Thanks for that. And thank you, Ron Whittington of Career Source and Tim Gibbons of the Business Journal. Guys, always good to have your insights. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead later, how the Jacksonville program Art Ventures is celebrating 3 decades of supporting local artists. But up next,
I thought, well, what better image or representation would be the Grim Reaper?
Actually, that is not what we're trying to tease. What we're teasing is that gyms in Florida are still closed, but the First Coast YMCA is not sitting idle. That's after this.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
The Voidcast from WJCT and Void Magazine is a Northeast Florida musical journey into the Allman Brothers Band's formative period in Jacksonville.
It was just like, you know, I'm hearing this magic being born.
The bedrooms where locals are making pop music in isolation.
I play everything on this keyboard.
Northeast Florida's hip-hop scene, where women and queer people are claiming their space.
We kind of were tokenized to kind of be like the openers.
Hear it at wjct.org/voidcast, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, as many businesses open up around the state, gyms remain closed, at least for the time being. But they are making plans for allowing you back in to work out. Like the First Coast YMCA, which is much more than a swim and gym, you might say. Full disclosure, I am a member of the Winston Y. My membership is on pause right now, like so many folks. But the YMCA is also offering emergency child care and giving support to seniors in this pandemic. I spoke about their situation and plans for the future reopening with Eric Mann. He's president of the First Coast Y. Let's listen. Eric Mann, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for being with you as well, Melissa.
This has been a tough time for everybody, and that includes gyms, places like the YMCA. You've really had to pivot and make a lot of quick decisions in these last weeks, like providing emergency child care, for example, to families in the community. What are some other changes you've been overseeing at the Y?
Well, the child care was a big one. One is because we're the largest provider of after-school child care in Northeast Florida, and when the schools closed, which we partner with the school districts, we had a capacity, and so we were able to redeploy a lot of our staff to provide that service. Another piece to it, Melissa, is really we've got over 10,000 senior members, and so we set out a goal to call each and every one of them to really see how we could assist them, because isolation is a constant issue all the time, and you can imagine what it was like during the pandemic and the closure. So our staff was able to call and provide some, not only support, but in a lot of ways, just having someone call and check on them, what we call well checks, was a big relief for them, and they stayed engaged, and we also provided virtual opportunities for them as well. And last but not least, we were able to work with Northeast Feeding Northeast Florida to get food to needy communities, along with our virtual platform in terms of how we stay connected with all of our members. And, you know, we had, we would have over 8,000 people a day being connected to our virtual platform. And so all of these things were, you know, new for everybody in the sense that we didn't have a whole lot of time to plan, but fortunately we've got a great team and we were able to pivot and provide those services on an ongoing basis.
Sure. And so obviously all of the members are looking forward to the time when they can come back into the Y, and your staff too. You've had to furlough most of your staff. So what are you hearing from your employees and your members about looking forward to reopening so people can come back into YMCA locations?
Well, we are, you know, we have great members and great staff. And yes, we unfortunately had to furlough a good number of our staff, and we're looking forward to getting them back. But our members have really stuck with us. I think they realize that we are more than just a swimming gym, that we provide other services. And so we are eager to get them back. And right now we're planning for when they can come back. Obviously, a lot of it has to do with both state and local government making the decision when it'd be safe. And so are we. And so we depend on that guidance, the CDC and our medical partners, to kind of give us an indication of when it will be safe to come back. But we hope that is soon, and we're preparing for that. It will look different than it was before, especially during phase one, but I believe that we will be able to be, and what we plan on being, is the safest place for our members to be. And so that's the first thing, and obviously along with that is keeping our staff safe.
Yeah. So when you say it will look different, Eric, exactly how? What will some of the procedures be?
Well, in the first phase, I think however we scan when we come in for a temperature check, we will have all our staff will be wearing PPEs. You will see a visual hypersensitive around cleaning and sanitizing all of our spaces ongoing all day. We will ask our members to be part of that and to hopefully understand some of the restrictions on space. Not sure exactly what the capacity limit both state and state and local government will put on spaces, but I'm sure they will. And so with that, we will manage the number of people that can be in a space at one time and then allow us continue to go back and clean that space once it's used. And so it will be different, similar to what restaurants are having to do now with outdoor and indoor restrictions on how many people can be in the space. I'm sure there will be some of those for us, but we have flexible space as well. So we'll have outdoor space. We'll have space inside of our Ys that people will be able to come back, get engaged. Hopefully they've kept up a little bit with their wellness, but we will have those services available.
Now, parents also are anxious to hear about plans for summer camp for their kids. You've got nearly two dozen day camp and overnight campsites around the area. What's the plan for summer camp?
For summer camp, our national organization has been working with the CDC to put in guidelines that all wives who have day camps and resident camp can really feel safe about their protocols. And so we will have those, and we hope that we'll be able to open on June the 1st. We're planning for opening then. And really, as you think about some of the needs, a lot of the parents who their children have been out of school, they're trying to get back to work, they really need quality care. And so we're going to be safe. The child will be safe within our day camps and our residence camp. They will also have some fun. And my guess is there'll be some educational parts to it around literacy and things of that nature in terms of reading you know, having some reading part of our daily activity as well. And so, but it is definitely something we're looking forward to. And again, we will be more than safe. We will be following the guidelines that we should be following to keep everybody healthy, both staff and participants.
Good to talk to you and get these updates. He is Eric Mann, president of the First Coast YMCA. Thanks, Eric.
Well, thank you, Melissa.
Okay, right now we want to give some shout outs to companies and people doing good things in this pandemic. Call it What's Good Wednesdays. Beginning with Blessings in a Backpack, helping local kids at risk of hunger. Over at the Hyde Grove Early Learning Center, hundreds of families can stop by each day to make sure their kids get food. They've even got a drive-through set up. Thanks for the email about that, folks. And the Ramallah Club raised more than $8,000 in donations in less than 2 weeks, filling up 100 boxes of non-perishable food. They're going to distribute them to families living near the Ramallah Club at the group's Drive Up Food Drive. It's this Saturday at 9 a.m. Go to Ramallah Club Jacks for more on that. Local handbag brand Nino Rossi is doing their part. They're donating 20% of their sales to direct relief, supporting frontline healthcare workers. And they're offering a unique discount code on every sale. For more information, go to ninorossi.com. And finally, congratulations are in order for Jacksonville's LPT. The band's debut album of all original salsa, Sin Parar, won top honors in the Best Latin Album category at the 18th Annual Independent Music Awards. This is a huge honor for the band and a continued opportunity to highlight all the talent in our area by bringing international attention to Jacksonville. Now, we continue to get lots and lots of emails from folks highlighting good efforts, volunteer efforts, food drives, mask making, fundraisers, you name it. People are sending us stuff all the time, and we want to highlight them, all of these efforts, on the show each week. So I'm making an executive decision. We're going to do this on Wednesday. For some reason, that seems to be the best place to do it, and we're going to call it What's Good Wednesdays. So please keep sending these items to us, and we will highlight them each Wednesday about this time. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and let us know what's going on in your neck of the woods to help our fellow neighbors in this crisis. One thing that's come out of this is that we've learned we all have to support and depend on each other and do what we can to help our coworkers, our neighbors, our friends, our families, anyone who needs it. Again, send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, and we'll highlight them each Wednesday, taking a look at What's Good Wednesday. In a moment, celebrating 30 years of Art Ventures on the First Coast, another good story, and we'll be right back.
PA, and Michael Cavendish, a law practice supporting Jacksonville's business community, downtown, by appointment, and on the web at cavpartners.com. Congaree and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congaree and penn.com for more information.
Working from home can be full of distractions, so some companies are going the extra mile by installing spyware to keep tabs on their employees.
if you're idle for a few minutes, go to the bathroom or whatever, a pop-up will kind of come up and it'll say, you have 60 seconds to start working again, or we're going to pause your time.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, a doctor working on treatments for COVID-19. He's best known for his research into the rare disorder he suffered from, Castleman disease. He created a network of doctors, patients, and scientists to crowdsource the most promising research for the disease with startling results. His new memoir is called Chasing My Cure. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
At what is a dark time, the arrival of a baby brings light and hope. But right now, for new and expectant moms, a newborn brings something very different too, added stress and isolation. And without the support systems many depend on, this is not how anyone would choose to start out as a parent. How are new mothers managing? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
So when things are especially hard for me, I tend to look deep inside. I sit still and just focus on my breath for several minutes. And then when I get to a place of a little more stillness and just silent meditation, with thoughts come up, let them go, thoughts come up, let them go. And then I want to look deep inside to the me that lives in the space without fear, the space without worry. Try to get present to the existence of myself as pure loving kindness, and say to myself, I am loving kindness. Over and over again, I am loving kindness. And the more I repeat that slow mantra to myself and with my breath and just seated meditation, it lifts all of the fear, doubt, and worry. And then when I feel complete, I take a deep breath in, I exhale, let it all go. And I am in a brand new space of creation and possibility and presence that didn't exist before.
And that's your midweek meditation from First Coast yogi and meditation leader Dan Nevins. Thanks, Dan, for that little moment of calm. Well, Art Ventures began way back in 1990 as a local commitment to invest in individual artists on the First Coast and arts organizations. Over the years, they've given out more than $1 million to hundreds of artists and arts groups. And this month, they're celebrating 30 years of supporting the arts in Jacksonville by honoring 18 local artists with Art Ventures grants of $3,500 each. Amy Crane is Senior Program Director with the Community Foundation of Northeast Florida, and she's on the line. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for letting us talk about Art Ventures today.
It's exciting to share some positive news after everything we've been going through. So you've picked 18 local artists. They each get $3,500 to pursue their artwork. Tell us about this.
Sure. And you know, again, the Community Foundation, we've been so focused on our First Coast Relief Fund, and it's equally important for us to look at all the bodies of work that we do, and that's Art Ventures truly is one of our favorites. It's the oldest fund at the Community Foundation. And so the 18 artists were selected this year. We moved up that review process so that we could actually put the funding in their hands quicker, you know, during this period of time. And the thing I think that's really exciting about this body of artists and their work is that it spans so many different disciplines. So we have music projects, writing, choreography, film, sound design, and of course we have some really brilliant visual artists. And so, you know, again, it just really shows us the breadth of what's happening in our community.
Absolutely. Now, everyone from writer and performer Barbara Colicello of Babs Lab to it's a great list here. Bob Moore, who composes sacred music, Ulysses Owens Jr., who's a Grammy Award-winning musician, Ebony Payne English, a poet and spoken word artist, writer Hurley Winkler, and many more. They will each win an individual grant. And what a shot in the arm for them, particularly given our economic situation right now, huh?
you know, it's a shot in the arm, and it's also, honestly, such a deep thank you from our community, from the Community Foundation, because of the really astounding work that they accomplish on our behalf and to really make Northeast Florida very vibrant and very creative. And so, yeah, it's really, truly, it's an award, but it's a thank you back to them.
You're also awarding grants to everyone from the Five and Dime Theater, the TAG Children's Museum, the Florida Chamber Music Project, and others, Hope at Hand, another great group. What's the criteria for choosing these groups?
So for the artists, we actually have an independent review panel that is their subject area experts and past award recipients. And then for the small arts organization grants, the ones you just mentioned, it's actually a staff and a trustee review process. And so it really, it's excellent work. That's what we're trying to acknowledge.
Well, there's so much of it out there. So many talented artists and worthy groups that support the arts to get into, to support, to visit. And as the community slowly opens back up, you will be able to visit some of these places in person again soon. And Amy, I hope to see you in person the next time we talk. So thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Thank you so much.
It's 30 years of Art Ventures grants on the First Coast, and Amy Crane is Senior Program Director with the Community Foundation of Northeast Florida. Kudos to all of the artists and arts organizations. Keep doing what you do and contribute to this vibrant local arts and culture community in our area. It means so much. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Jessica Palumbo is 89.9's news director. And our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. Plus you, you're the vital final piece. Keep that feedback coming to us by calling every day and send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We really do appreciate your feedback. If you missed anything from today's show, you can catch our podcast later on today at wjct.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Let's connect again then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.